I'm here to say good evening and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White, otherwise known as the Zany Mystic. Tonight's guest is Dr. Michael R. Smith, Ph.D. Dr. Smith specializes in the recognition and development of empathy. He has been an empathic healing practitioner and counselor for 15 years. Michael is a former professor of counseling who focuses on alternatives to traditional therapy, an author, speaker, and leader in the field of spiritual counseling. Michael has interests and experience in shamanism, mind-body energy medicine, and uses methods of indigenous healing in his phone coaching practice. Presently, he hosts two websites, The Empathy Connection at www.imagine-wellness.com, and his blog, www.imaginewellness.blogspot.com. So let's welcome Michael to the show now. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, good. Well, you know, when I read your PDF file that you sent me before the show, it just really grabbed me. You know, your experiences with the indigenous natives and in the tent ceremony and just some of the experiences you had with empathy. So. And I'm empathic, so I felt like this would be a good subject for us to talk about today.
Well, I'm here in my living room, and I've got a couple of candles lit to bring forth that energy of the fireside chat. So I think it's going to be a fun hour.
I'm glad you said that because it's been raining here, and to be honest with you, I love to tell the listeners what's going on. It's been raining all day long, and my internet's been up and down all day long. I haven't really been able to get on there, and I couldn't connect your websites to get the information about your background and so on and so forth, and I didn't want to make it up.
And so we could have done that. It might have been fun.
Well, yeah, and I didn't want to say, well, this is Dr. Smith, and here's Will and Penny and
right.
Robot.
Right.
I'm sure you get jokes about that all the time. So it was so cold that I thought, well, heck, I'm just going to go ahead and make a fire. So I am sitting in a room with a real fire.
Beautiful. Yes. Yes. I love that. It's good energy.
Doesn't it communicate something? And I know the listeners can feel that energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. I when I used to teach a class, I used to teach counseling at the University of Wyoming. I would have my students take a candle, and during group sessions, we would place that candle in the middle of the room to sort of simulate the energy of the fire and what the energy of the fire brings to our life.
Well, you know, we used to be tribes, and we always sat around the fire and we told stories and carried on traditions. And it just seems to me like so much of that has been lost. With some of the indigenous shamans, which you probably have met and talked to, are carrying on today around the world.
So is there a question in there?
Well,
about losing the traditions. Not sure if I understand correctly.
Yes. How does fire connect us to the other planes? In other words, it's always been a mystical element for us. I mean, you know, the Wicca celebrate the fire, water, earth, and air. But fire has a certain magical connection to the astral plane, I think. And some say that if you have a candle lit, that you are safe inside your own space.
Absolutely. Well, just speaking for myself, I know that when I light, what I'm doing is I'm making a connection to a spirit.
Uh-huh.
And I light that fire. And whether it's a fire used for ceremony or whether it's a fire just, you know, for purposes of tonight before the show to sort of center,
uh-huh.
I'm establishing when we make that or when we light that fire, we make that connection to that spirit. And it's just as if you were going to have a conversation or say hello to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way that I, you know, the way that, that I look at it. And it, it, if we treat the fire as our friend, and if we listen to what it has to share with us, because it has a lot, then, you know, we just, we become friends with it. We can learn from it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, do you feel that the everything is alive and it's speaking to us in a certain way?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, yes, everything is alive. In fact, my greatest, you know, my teachers took some time to get that that belief into me. You know, when I was sort of in my, what I refer to as my unconscious period, I didn't see that. And I think part of the strong motivation for my work is because I do experience now everything as being alive, is to be able to share that, that wisdom that is given to us and has been taught to us by mm-hmm. the indigenous elders and teachers for thousands and thousands of years, and things that we've lost here in the Western world. Everything's alive. Everything. It's vibrating.
Yeah.
Everything is. I told a client the other day, everything is energy.
I'm feeling it right now.
That's right. And,
yeah.
And it feels good. Really good.
Yeah. And it informs us. And if it feels good, you know, of course there's that silly saying, if it feels good, do it. But I'm, you know, in a sense, if you're connected intuitively and empathic, then you rely on that feeling of good feelings to proceed with things. And when we don't rely on those feelings and we think there's just a kind of this feeling about something, that's how I recognize my own empathy, when it's trying to tell me something that I shouldn't, something that's not going to work out in my favor.
Yes, yes, and that's a great skill that you have, and that so many of us are waking up to now, is taking that listening, kind of that listening on that empathic level, which is a listening on it's on many different levels. For some empaths who use that term, it's emotional. It's on the emotional level. Uh-huh. Some that might be more on the physical level, but there's so many different levels, so many different planes of existence, if you will, and we just, all we really have to do is just merge our consciousness with wherever we want to go, and if we listen carefully, and if we practice the art of listening, boy, we can learn a lot.
Well, were you always empathic as a child? I mean, did you, you know, have strange experiences? I know for me, it was a very mysterious world I lived in, being an only child, and I had invisible playmates. That's usually a sign that, you know, something is going on there. What about for you? Did you have some kind of experiences that you could say relate to this?
Absolutely. In fact, I was a very gifted was the word that was used a lot for moi. But absolutely. But nothing out of the realm. I mean, nothing that was nothing that was unusual in terms of,
like a child prodigy. In other words,
no, exactly.
But you knew things, and you were special.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot of the people sometimes use that term, and I think you referred to that in an email, of the indigo children. The crystal kids that are coming around now.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd be aware of that and would share some of your information with us.
I'm curious to find out, you know, what your interests are in that area. But I guess I do identify as an indigo. Put terribly too much. I think it's a really helpful way for people to identify their own special uniqueness.
Yes.
And
yes.
So
yes.
yeah. the label indigo, sometimes we have a tendency to use those labels as, I see it as an affirmative thing, and those labels, it's a way of explaining the beauty and the uniqueness of just every individual.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the way that I see it. And
yeah, absolutely. And I discovered and involved with that process is some kind of awakening to your own reality. And I think that's another subject I'd like to talk about, is if there was a moment when you felt that you were awakened, or that you were kind of brought into the fold, and you just like, oh yes, this is it.
Yeah.
An aha.
Wow.
You know,
Sure. Yeah, I do have a definite moment, two moments that stand out, and they happened within 24 hours of each other.
Uh-huh.
It was a couple of years ago when I was going through some intense physical healing work, and we were doing, trained, I hesitate to use that word trained because it sounds so formal, but yeah. Educated might be a better word, in the Lakota ways. Some of the Native American ways, with the sacred Inipi, which some people may know as a sweat lodge or a purification lodge,
which is
a ceremony that's been used for, since the beginning of probably human history. Thousands of years. Yeah, we can talk more about that later if you're interested. In answer to that specific question that you asked about, was there a specific moment? Absolutely. We were doing it in Nipi, which is a sweat lodge, and I felt that I was being reborn, literally, and I refer to this as my moment of being reborn, where all of the energy, old energy, and I don't know where this energy came from. It doesn't really matter where it came from. It was old. And it was being pulled out through the top of my head and into the rocks in the center of the heated rocks that are heated with fire and then placed in the center of the lodge. And it's, of course, this is all happening in the dark. And everyone is singing and chanting and raising our vibrations real high, calling in spirit, connecting with our ancestors. And that moment, I just felt it all coming out the top of my head, and it was being pulled out into the fire, and I'll never forget it. And I came out of that lodge on my hands and knees, and I couldn't even stand up.
I hear you.
Yeah, it was another world.
What was that like? What did you see and experience from there? I mean, it must have been transformational for you.
It was. It was very transformational, because what happened after that was that night, I used to think that the angels were myths, M-Y-T-H. Being kind of the growing up intellectual and having the benefit of the Western world's white education.
Right.
You know, I would see angels as, oh, this is just, a figment of people's imaginations. Well,
uh-huh.
I found out that evening that it's no myth. They're very real. And they came and gave me about 10 to 12 pages of information that I just wrote down. And to this day, it's one of the most amazing experiences, of most comforting, spiritually comforting experiences of my life, because it was just pure love.
Yes. Absolutely.
Pure love.
Absolutely.
And I was reading on your blog today that you've had experiences with angels.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes, I've had a few. One of the awakenings that I had was the result of taking a certain medication that I needed for to treat HIV, and I started taking it, and it crossed the blood-brain barrier, and all of a sudden it was like taking LSD, and I thought, this isn't right. What's going on? And it just, every day I would take the Sestiva, And after the second or third day, I was channeling God.
Uh-huh.
The second day, and the third day, I was seeing angels in the window. I mean, what sounds like what you had, if you want to label it, is a kundalini experience.
Hmm.
When the energy that's the coiled serpent rises from the sacrum area, and it just shoots up through the chakras and it goes out the top of your head, and that's what happened to me too.
Wow.
And in that moment, it was so shocking and so enlightening and loving that I just it just leaves you dumbfounded.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, we're never alone. From the moment
right.
we're born to the moment we die, it's all an illusion. We think that we're alone, but every step of the way we're guided.
Yes.
And it was so clear in that moment. I mean, I saw it all, like, kind of like they describe in near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see your whole life before you. Well, it's kind of like that, and people are having those experiences today. And, and it's amazing. And then, I mean, I'm going to send you my book because I had some other encounters with angels that were, you know, not at all related to having taken anything. I was, quote, stone cold sober, and I was warned by an angel one time about something. He came in and took over somebody's body and said, I'm an angel and here to warn you. So, I would love to have more experiences, but I guess they only intervene when they feel that
yeah.
it's necessary.
But we're never alone. We're always
being
watched over and protected. And one of the things that I just find so fascinating is those near-death experiences. You know, it's interesting that the parallels between I've always been interested in the dream world, the dream space, the dream time. I'd like to hear your thoughts on dreams as well. And I've just been inherently drawn to that area because there's just so much wisdom that can be gleaned every single night that we sort of cross over into those other realms. You know, if we listen, I always tell my clients, if we listen closely enough and if we're really dedicated, we can bring that wisdom back to Earth. And that's kind of our job, is to bring that back to Earth for the benefit of everyone, the whole community.
Absolutely. Do you feel that these are particularly special times that are designed for that purpose, that we're here to channel information and light and love onto the planet for a particular reason?
Well, that's an interesting question, and my personal belief is yes, and it's the belief of a lot of the people that I hang out with, a lot of the, you know, my native teachers and elders, and they've been speaking about that for many years. I mean, they've known about these times now, and you can look at books, you know, prophecies and
all
that sort of stuff, just fascinating stuff. I just love looking at that.
I do too.
The short answer is yes. In fact, on my Gaia, I belong to an online community called Gaia, which used to be known as Zads, and it's
I remember that.
Do you know Zads? Yeah, it's kind of like a conscious networking, social networking
site.
I love
that.
Yeah, it's a great site. And I put up last year, it was 2007, I was working with a woman named Amaya, who would be a great person to have on your show. She channels a group of beings called Isaiah, and I was working real closely with her. And sure enough, as soon as the more I worked with her and the more I hung around that energy, it started coming through me as well.
Oh, cool.
And so I put... For most of the year 2007, I had some channelings about some of the earth changes that are happening.
I don't see any of that on your site, but I would love to find out more about it.
I don't really publicize that too much.
You'll have to join my group, Awakening Cosmic Consciousness, and write about it in the group.
Sure, I would love to.
I have a channeler that I just adore, Magenta Pixie. And she's online, and I just fell in love with her. I just love her channels. And then she brought forth somebody named Adamu. And so I asked her if she wanted to be in the group, and so she's in the group.
Wonderful.
So it's a wonderful place for people to, you know, who resonate together to meet and share their views.
That's the thing, is that the great thing about the internet, actually Amaya was used the word, she made me look at the internet differently forever after this point. She said that the internet is kind of like telepathy. It's good for those people who, it's a good way to access and network with each other and really in the Lakota ways, we talk about Ngomi, the web, the spider, and how we're all connected in that with that medicine, quote unquote medicine. And the internet is a great place.
Oh, absolutely.
Great place to advance our consciousness.
Absolutely.
Get the word out.
In fact, it may be one of the few ways that we can do that, because, you know, so few people have, at least this is my experience, people are awakening, but, you know, as a whole, we're kind of a little slow on the upturn here. And, you know, to find people who have had experiences like you and I are talking about, well, the listeners too, I'm sure.
Sure.
You know, you have to kind of go searching. It's like a little search, and it's kind of exciting when you find another person of like mind, which is like a soul family person. And who knows, we might be friends in another galaxy.
That's a whole other ball of wax.
Yes, we could really go off on a tangent with
that. We could. Well, it's great.
Bring me back down to earth here a little bit.
Right. Well, you know, the funny thing is that I used to always, when I'm in circle, I don't say it so much anymore, but I used to always complain. You know, one of the things about being empathic is that, and I'm sure many of the listeners, some of the listeners who are listening can identify with this, is that we sort of travel between two worlds.
Yeah.
We're travelers. And in the native ways, that's called, you know, in some traditions, it's called a walks between, is kind of how they refer to that same concept. You travel into other realms and then bring that your the goal, if you're any good, is that you can bring it back to Earth. And so I used to always joke that, you know, I have no Earth in my chart, and I'm a double Scorpio.
Ooh, my goodness.
Sun and moon.
Oh,
and and a Leo rising, and it's all fire and water.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
One of my tasks in this lifetime, and it's been, I just thank the mother, Wunsi Makah, Mother Earth, I just thank her and honor her so much, because there was a time in my life where I didn't honor her, and because I didn't feel like I belonged on Earth. And the journey over the last 5-6 years has been to embrace being a human, to embrace being a human being. And I give thanks to my teachers, Bro and Wolf by name, for giving me and helping me with their medicine, so that I can, you know, appreciate being a human being in physical form.
and not
float off all the time.
Yes, because, you know, I go there too. It's like, you know, there's a part of me that wants to just kind of go out the top of my head and leave and say goodbye, and, you know, there's value in learning how to be in your body. And, you know, we didn't come here to leave. We came here to experience.
That's right.
It's important to ground ourselves on the earth. The earth is really important to us right now.
Hugely.
And it should be. And, you know, unfortunately, it's very painful for an empath to experience the I don't want to call it pain, because it's not pain, but it's the lack of respect for the earth and the unconsciousness of people who are not experiencing an awareness of what's happening. And that's difficult for all empaths, I think.
Yes, you're right, it is. And do you, I'm curious, when did you hear that term empath and start to identify? You do identify with that term?
Oh, absolutely. I remember being a little kid and, you know, just in my own little world and talking to who knows what it was. I mean, angels, guides. But I was always sensing and picking up everything. And, you know, as a result, with my parents, I walked on eggshells, because both of my parents were both alcoholic.
Wow.
And my dad was a Jekyll and Hyde drinker, but my mother was a happy drunk, and they had a lot of friends that came up from Hollywood, and so it was very entertaining, but I could sense portents, I could sense moods, I mean, I felt everything, and I felt as if I had to just walk a fine line in order to just survive. And I know a lot of people who talk about empathy say that it's just a very difficult process for them. They go to the store and they pick up all the vibes of the people there. And, you know,
yeah.
I know that there are so many techniques that we can use. Well, there's, you know, various shielding techniques where you create a, you know, you probably do that in your work where you.
I do. That's almost that is really exclusively what I do. Yeah. And
That's a wonderful thing. You know, to have people with your training and your intuitive abilities to be able to counsel people who are having problems, you know, with empathy. One thing I wanted to ask you about is how do people recognize that they're empathic? I think anybody that's listening that is empathic knows, probably.
Right, they know.
Yeah, they know.
Yeah.
But isn't there a little denial in there with some people that they say, they kind of dismissed it with their minds? And
yes, and that's a really good point, is that I don't think it's a conscious denial. It is more than it is a lack of acknowledgement or a lack of understanding. And
yeah.
So the work that I do is to help empaths and empathic individuals, sensitive people who are sensitive to emotions and feelings and thoughts of others, is to help them understand that what they have in their cells, literally, and in their bodies, and even the thoughts that come into their mind are not necessarily, and in most cases, it's not them.
It's just not them.
And once you realize that,
yeah.
That is the hugest relief that an empath can possibly have. Oh my God! You mean I'm not wounded? I'm not this terrible person,
right?
You know, because the empaths are in touch with the dark side. They know the shadow very well.
Oh yes.
Yeah, they know the shadow because the shadow can attack and rear its head.
And we can internalize it, you know, and then it's easy to think that this is us. And then you can't step out of it, because once that side kind of prevails, it's difficult to step out of yourself. So,
unless you have someone who understands, and B, someone who is strong enough and has looked at their own shadow and been able and can help you to help you deal with your own.
Yes. Speaking of the shadow, it's important also, isn't it, for all of us to be in touch with our shadow side and to bring it up and to accept it, love it, embrace it, and not necessarily let it go, but to allow it to be, because
absolutely.
So many people are in denial of their shadow.
Yeah, and the thing is that you can do many things. You can fight against your shadow, and usually that turns out to be kind of futile. Losing battle for most people, and that's why they seek out help is to embrace that shadow and see it as an ally, a strong ally.
Yeah.
Someone said to me, I think it was Amaya, I think it was one of my friends, it might have been in a channeling, but the message was, and I thought it was eloquently phrased, that the shadow, unbeknownst to itself, serves God.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Wow,
that
just like,
is
whoa.
Just wonderful.
Yeah.
I was just doing some research right along that, and that was the same conclusion that I was coming to, that the shadow serves God.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that it's here it's not here to destroy us, it's here to empower us. And by transforming the shadow, we are getting the lessons that we need to have to move forward.
Yes, and you said a real key word as well, and this is a key word for empaths, is to accept the shadow. And accept the shadow as part of God. And we don't know why the shadow exists.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
We just know that it exists. It is part of living. It is part of being human. And until that circle is mended fully, there will be a shadow, because the shadow has been created by great mystery, great spirit.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yes, that's very good. Wow. Geez.
It's good.
I really like that. That's really good. Do you also teach people, or do you work with people on developing their abilities? Because the empathic ability can be developed as well.
Yes. I work with people on developing their awareness. I find that, the awareness of their abilities, the abilities in and of themselves, those can be developed. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Those abilities, the intuitive abilities, absolutely can be refined. For someone who is already an empath or already highly sensitive, they're probably, the ability itself is not the problem. It's understanding when you are in a state of picking up other people's energy or spiritual energy, or that's, you know, 90% of it right there is just understanding that when it is that you're feeling sad or feeling an emotion and not being jerked around. My client used that word the other day, jerked around. I feel like I'm being jerked around. And so, but absolutely, the abilities can be developed, and I do both. I help people accept their abilities, refine their abilities, and listen with a more refined ear, so that they can understand when it's not them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One way that I worked with developing my own over the years was, it was real simple. It was just kind of an intuitive process, which consisted of listening to that little voice inside. You know, there's that gut feeling, and some people have it in their solar plexus, others have it in other places, but you learn to recognize that gut feeling. And that voice that comes up first that says, this might not be a good idea. And then your mind comes in and says, oh, go on, turn the door, you open the door, there's no monster back there. And then, well, I'm not sure. And you open the door and there's a monster. So I've learned to listen to that, even though I don't get to see the monster all the time, to verify that there was a monster. But there's so many times when I don't listen to it, and there is a monster behind the door, that I validate that my intuition is right. So I consider that kind of like a psychic workout, and, you know, building up your psychic muscles.
Psychic muscles, yes. What you describe as quote, psychic muscle, with my clients I think we're saying the same thing here, is that I help them to find and to use their other two brains. With someone as, and I'm talking about the heart chakra and the gut as being centers of information, centers that process information but aren't recognized by most people as being brains. But in reality, that's really what they are. We have three brains. We have the mental body, the cerebellum or cerebrum. We have the heart chakra, which is the center of input and the bridge between heaven and earth. And then we have the gut, which, if you look at the nervous system of the gut, there is actually more nerves in the enteric nervous system, which is the gut, for lack of a better word, than there is in the what we know as the brain, the head, the cerebrum. Psychic muscle, absolutely. Build that muscle, yes. And get in touch with your other two brains that, you know, kind of in the Western world we ignore, absolutely.
And, you know, another thing that comes to mind, I'm just kind of going off of what you're just saying, is the need to balance the left and right side of the brain. The left side being the male-dominated, more logical, and the right being the intuitive and more feminine. And I think for some of us, we're born with a little bit more of one or the other. Most males are born heavily into the left-brained activities, and tend to go towards type A situations, you know, aggressive and so on and so forth. But some of us have chosen another route before we incarnated here and had a preponderance of the right brain brought in with us. And so there's a better balance, but it's confusing along the way because there's the female and the male inside. And, you know, there can be a struggle when that doesn't necessarily match up with the perceptions of people in society.
Yes, and I do. I see that, and I see that all the time. And you said some really key things. Balance being a key between, and I'm going to use a term that I'm familiar with, is
okay.
Polarity.
Yes,
now,
that's good.
Polarity. I do a little work as a polarity therapist. Occasionally I'll do a session. I have some training in what's called polarity therapy.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting how I was drawn to that. I just, even before I knew anything about polarity therapy, hold on.
Yeah, okay.
Are you still there? Okay. I had a polarity moment. One of those moments where spirit kind of, the phone just fell on the floor.
It happens, you know.
It happens.
Life interferes with life. I mean,
life interferes with. That's right.
Angels are trying to tell us something.
Okay,
go on.
What are they trying to tell us?
Just to be awake and present and have fun and enjoy the whole process of being alive.
Yeah, and having a good laugh every now and then.
And yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was drawn. I'm sorry, go ahead. You were going
to... And we can't predict what's going to happen from moment to moment.
My goodness. Absolutely. And, you know, I work with the coyote, the medicine of the coyote. And that is a very strong medicine in that. I'm constantly doing things like what just happened. You know, the phone's flying out of my hands and... Things aren't going according to plan, and
that's been my thing all day.
Has it?
Yeah,
there you go. So we ask, underneath this conversation right now? I can just feel that, and I honor the beauty of that energy, of that kind of that trickster energy.
The trickster, yes, he's been my life for sure. Oh my!
Well, with a name like Zany Mystic, how can it not be?
Well, I suppose. I mean, I'm just used to it. I guess I need to get more used to it because, you know, here we are.
Yes. And I encourage anyone who's listening to this, you know, to seek out information on what in Lakota is known as the Hayoka, which is the opposite, the trickster energy, and the ally of the Hayoka, who works in an works deliberately designed as this, you know, to teach spiritual messages in a paradoxical opposite manner. The ally of the Hayoka is the coyote, and there's so much, too much to go into right now. But I would encourage any listeners who are listening, if you identify with that kind of, not only maybe even being empathic or psychic or intuitive, but on top of that, acting in a backwards, self-deprecating manner and appreciating being self-deprecating. Well, if that's you, then you can learn a lot from the Hayoka medicine and the coyote, and learning from the medicine. So I would encourage you to seek out that information. Yeah.
And does that kind of fall into the category of animal totems that are?
Yeah.
Because everybody has to have an animal totem. And the eagle or the hawk or the owl or I don't know. There's quite a few. There's some sites that will tell you what your animal totem is. But I think you probably have a better grasp of it, that it's something that you discover along the way, possibly in a sweat lodge or, you know, it's a mystical experience.
It's a mystical experience, and I would not discourage people from seeking out and establishing a relationship with animals.
Oh, yeah.
That you are called to, or that it's so important to, I hesitate to use the word necessary because I don't want to go down that road, but our lives can be so enriched when we honor all of creation, when we honor animals as being teachers, and really listening to them because they're constantly communicating always things about, not just messages about them per se, but really messages from the universe, creator.
Yes, right? They're like they're translators from the stars.
Yes.
And they break down these messages that we may not be able to receive directly. And, you know, the plants, the trees, they're all trying to communicate those messages to us, I believe, when we're open to it and get the information from other galaxies, this galaxy, from the ether, higher dimensions and so on and so forth, and trying to communicate with us.
I have to say something here, and then I don't have any name. I'm a white man, right? I'm a white boy.
Right.
Who has had I'm not native.
Right.
And I want to make that very clear. I don't speak for the native First Nation people.
Right.
I speak for myself as a person who has been lucky enough and been honored enough to be able to hang around some people who were helping me to get out of my own way and show me show me some things about great mystery and creator. So I want to make that very clear that I speak of these things just because I am a white person who just sees so much beauty in those traditions that have been, in many ways, that we've lost touch with. And so I bring up those things because it's part of my, I just want to honor those traditions and I want to honor those teachings.
I feel the same way. I'm also a white, I'm not a boy anymore, but we passed beyond that level of a life experience, but I have such a profound feeling of connection to those traditions and to all shamanic traditions. I mean, there are the Mayans that are alive today. There's the Kogi that live in, I believe it's South America. I'm not sure where that is. But anyway, these are living, breathing connections to the past, and we've kind of turned our back on that.
Yeah.
And the past is a rich tapestry that we're not tapping into, and I think that this is a period of time when we're being led to make some choices about where we want to go. Do we want to continue on the roads that we're on? And is this a satisfactory road that we're headed down? And if not, where do we fit in? And what can we do personally to awaken and find our own soul's path? Because each soul has its own unique path. And sometimes I feel like we've been kind of herded like cattle to the slaughter. You know, and you have to wake up before you get to the point where you're, hanging by a hook.
Unfortunately, for better or for worse, that's sometimes we have to hang by a hook in order to have the motivation to change.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. And we may just be. What do you see in? What do you see today? I mean, does it seem like? What do you feel about these times? I mean, I do a lot of research on 2012 and the Earth rising and energy and so on and so forth. And I find a lot of evidence for that because I'm looking for it, but.
Sure.
What's your sense of it? What's your take?
Well, it's interesting. These are interesting times, I don't think anybody if you're a person who can tolerate ambiguity, then you would say, these are exciting times. If you're a person who needs constant reassurance that everything is going to be okay and everything is going to continue the way it is, then, well, maybe these aren't so exciting times. I guess it just depends on your viewpoint.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, these are... My personal belief is that, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you just open your eyes, if we open our eyes and see, you know, it's difficult to see from the big picture sometimes. And yet, if we can stop what we, our little worlds,
mm-hmm.
just for a moment,
mm-hmm.
and realize that there's something bigger happening, and in the same breath, we can say, we don't know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
We know that there's something bigger happening.
Yeah.
But we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And it will be revealed to us in time.
Yeah.
That's the way that I look at it.
Oh, there's
so much
wisdom in that.
Mm. Yep.
There's so much in living in the question and not knowing.
That's right.
I find a lot in the group that I have and other groups that there's a great desire to know. And I think a lot of that is just mind activity, and, you know, people want answers,
right.
and they want to know, and when is this going to happen, and are we going to send, is this going to happen? And but to live in the question and to live without knowing the answer is truly a challenge.
That is right.
And that is moving closer to the mystery and the reality of what is.
Wow, isn't that amazing what you just said? The mystery of what is, I mean, the mystery, great mystery. Is
mm-hmm.
this, it's the same thing. There's so many different words for, you know, Yahweh, God, creator, universe. I mean, there's many different words to refer to that. And I love using that phrase, great mystery, just because it is. We don't know what it is. We just know that it is. We know that it exists, that it is, and that's about all we know.
It's about it.
It really is. It's a mystery, and that's part of the joy of life. And if you live long enough, and if you come from a place of your heart, these words are just coming from my teachers. Trust me, this is coming from a lot of years of hitting my head up against the wall. that if you come from a place of living from the heart. And now I just lost my
train of thought.
Spirit saying, don't get too long-winded, Michael.
That's all right. But I think you said it. If you come from a space of living from the heart, period.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, what more is there to say? You know, out of your head, move into your heart.
Right.
And your heart speaks without words. You know,
it's
a wordless space. There's actually some kind of chamber, according to some mystics, that is within the heart. That's a real place that you can actually go into.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm just finding out about some of this stuff.
Well, you can put your consciousness anywhere, and one of the cool things that I've had the benefit of is, you know, learning a little bit about anatomy as being a polarity therapist, which is the polarity therapy is based on Chinese medicine and East Indian Ayurvedic medicine. And so I got a little bit. It's a smattering. It's not in depth. It's certainly not a medical education, but a little bit of, you know, anatomy and energetic anatomy and physical anatomy. And one of the things that we learned to do was to put our consciousness into the valves of our heart.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, for those of you that might be listening right now, I'd invite you to take this moment and just shift your consciousness using all the powers of your creativity to move your consciousness. Let's do this right now.
Okay.
Would you be willing to do a little experiment?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's do it. Okay. So let's take our consciousness and let's move it using our creative powers and shift it visually and with all your intention from your head and move it down into your heart and getting specific about your heart. Just go and say hello to the valves. You don't have to know where they're located. located. You only have to know that they exist. And they are centers where energy accumulates in our hearts, physically. So to do a nice little clearing of those areas is to just merge your consciousness and take the next 15 seconds of silence or so, say hello to the valves of your heart, and then merge your consciousness around, move it around to the back of your heart, the front of your heart, and the left and the right sides of your heart. Just take a few moments of silence to do that. Let's all do that. And at the same time, just calling in that God source energy, asking it to heal the heart, heal the valves, and push out anything that is not necessary. Just know that that energy will be now on its way out. I'm curious as to what you experienced or what you are experiencing energetically.
Nice.
It's good. The energy changed, did it not? The energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Just,
definitely.
Simply by that act of placing your awareness. Yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes we're so conditioned to avoid silence.
Mm-hmm.
That just listening. There's many things being communicated in that silence. And a lot of the work that I do with people is to pull up those messages that are contained right now, in this moment. What else is being said?
Yeah.
So how do you, I'm just curious, tell me a little bit about, or I don't know if I
of transparent. I started about 3.5 years ago, and I didn't know anything about doing a radio show, and I just kind of got thrown into it. I got asked if I wanted to do one, and it was a pivotal moment for me. I don't know how to do a radio show. You know, the mind tells you you can't do things. But I remember my grandmother, who was a pioneer from Kansas, always said, never say you can't. And so I thought to myself, what opportunity would I miss, and would I know it, if I said no? I would always wonder if I didn't try this and didn't give it my best. And so I did.
Mm.
And I just started asking people that I admired if they wanted to be on the show, people that had moved me in some way, writers or psychics or, you know, people that I'd read their books or whatever. And it became such a learning experience. And then I found the synergy between the guest and myself and the audience was so powerful that all of us walked away in a higher state. And I, you know, I realized that, gee, there's some more to this than a meets the eye. So, and plus, it's a wonderful opportunity to ask all the questions from people who are experts in their field about spiritual matters and about the coming shifts and various other things, and to get that information out into the general populace. And I just ask what interests me. So it's kind of that's kind of how it's worked.
I just thought it's fantastic that your show, and I was looking at the number of some of the guests that you've had on your show, and I was like, oh my God, I'm not worthy. Neil Donald Walsh, you know, it's just wow. It's pretty amazing
Don't all of us empaths feel that at most of the time we're not worthy?
Absolutely, you just hit the nail on the head.
So from me, speaking as an empath and an old indigo, and from you, hopefully, you will agree with me, anybody that feels that they're not worthy, just know that that is your mind talking, and you are so worthy.
Absolutely.
And of that and of anything and everything, that we are all God incarnate. And, you know, you don't have to believe that to feel it, but we are all worthy. And you know, I hope that people can go away with that feeling that, you know, follow your dream and follow your heart and do what makes you happy.
Absolutely. Well said. I love that. Do what makes you happy.
I was hoping you would say the last words on the show, but it turns out that I kind of...
There you go.
...gave me the space to do it.
So
I just kind of filled it, so... I'm sorry if I took the space from you. I'll have to have you back again, Michael. You're just wonderful.
I would love to be back on the show. It's been enjoyable time.
I so support what you're doing. Tell us before we go, because we're real close now. Give us your website and how you can be reached.
Sure, I can be reached. I have at imagine-wellness.com, and I'm in the process of. It's really over the course of the last month that's. It's been turned into an online resource center for empaths and highly sensitive people. I've got lectures and audio seminars and free information and articles and you can sign up for my newsletter that goes out once a month. And I've got a lot of energy tips and tricks and things that I've learned from, you know, 15 years. wellness.com, and I appreciate that.
Thanks again, Michael. I'll have you back.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care. Okay.
Many blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.